Cougar fans, it is time.
Touchdown! What a grab!
It's time to raise your colors, raise your voice, and join in on the raucous roundtable about your favorite team, the BYU Cougars.
20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown!
It's time to tailgate. Cougar Tailgate, where BYU sports fandom lives. And here's your host, Lauren McClain.
What's up, Cougar Nation? I'm Lauren McClain, and we're here to tailgate with you, doing what we do best, talking all things BYU Cougars. For this week's roundtable discussion, we have one of our producers, Carter Bond, and former BYU football quarterback from 2009 to 2012, former BYU football analyst, Riley Nilsen. Thank you so much for being here, guys.
Great to be with you.
Thank you.
Riley, okay, we're so excited to have you on here because I want to know, how would you sum up your experience at the alumni game last week?
So maybe it's unique, maybe it's not, but I have brothers and a lot of friends that have played a lot of other places, and like, we are the envy of all other programs. Like, even just the fact that we got like those custom, just the little jerseys, you know, it's like fake, it's not even a real practice jersey. You could see how easy they were tearing when some of the guys were grabbing jerseys and stuff. But like, the fact that it's got that, the Big 12 logo, your name, number on the back, and it's in the actual colors, like even little things like that, not to mention the fact that anybody that needed cleats, they supplied with cleats. And we're just talking about the game. Forget the whole alumni day, getting to meet Kalani and the luncheons and being at practice and the access we had to the current players and coaches, just – Still coming down off of it. It's a utter hot, you know, it's a huge amount of work that Jack DeMooney and Coach Satake and all those guys do. But boy, is that work incredibly appreciated by us as the alumni base and us old guys, even if it's just one day a year to relive the glory days, it's well worth it.
Do you feel like that really does help with bringing some of these guys back that maybe otherwise wouldn't? Because like you said, not a lot of programs put on a production quite like BYU does. Do you feel like that helps bring some of these former players back?
Kalani had us ready to run through a wall as far as, you know, we had about an hour with him in the morning, and other than giving us program updates and, you know, kind of just some of the nice kind of laid back stuff that Kalani did, he kind of ended it by saying, guys, like, we've got a recruiting staff like you never had here, and coaches are working, and we're all doing that. We all know that recruiting is the lifeblood of every program. He goes, but our best recruits are going to come from you because you're going to know what BYU means. Anyway, he had everybody in that room like ready to run through a wall, calling their local coach, asking to come down, you know, 7-on-7 tournaments and do all that stuff. So even if they get, you know, one or two recruits out of it that are high level guys that end up becoming, you know, contributors to the program because an alumni base, rather than sitting passively in their community, is activated to go out and actively look for guys who fit that mold and contribute and can build the current program, but also continue the legacy of BYU football, more than worth it. And it was amazing because, I mean, Kalani's, anybody who's spent anything more than 30 seconds with him knows he has that ability. Is just because he's so genuine, he truly cares. Mm-hmm. And he's a great motivator. And it felt like I was a former player ready to run out on the field for a big game. But instead, I'm an old washed up guy and he needs me to go find high schoolers to feed into his program. But happy to do either.
I'll do anything you want me to do, Kalani. No, I love that you said he's genuine. That really is one of his gifts. And that is just brilliant. Just rallying all the alumni to help you recruit. Saves a lot of money as well. What was it like having Steve Young steal your playbook and throw some passes?
It's pretty awesome. I mean, Steve's getting up there. Like, my dad and Steve are the same age. So I know what it's like for a guy in his early 60s to kind of get out there and move around. My dad, Steve had children a little bit later in life and he's had more girls. And it sounds like they don't – maybe they play softball or not. I've seen mostly – you know, you hear most of the news about flag football, but – I talk about the equivalent age. My dad, having three sons and all the batting practice and quarterback training and all that, his shoulder shot. He couldn't throw if he wanted to. So just the sheer fact that Steve was doing it. And the funny thing was, go back and watch the tape. Like, he still got those same movements you saw when he was donning the Y on his helmet or when he was with the 49ers. The light feet, the release is still the same. And then here's the thing I loved, because people were, they were like, how was Steve's arm? And I was like, listen, Steve never counted on his arm. He was extremely accurate and threw with great anticipation. The accuracy, he hasn't lost one iota of it. And the anticipation's still there. He's just got to throw it a little bit earlier because the ball takes a little bit longer to get there. But boy, they're both there in spades. And that was a big treat for all of us to share the field with a gold jacket wearing Hall of Famer.
Well, we watched your interview with Spencer Linton on BYU Sports Nation, and you mentioned, like, even though you're so much removed from the game, as soon as you're put in that situation again, it just feels like you're young again, right? You mentioned that all those things come back to you. Like, I know I need to be careful because I'm a little bit older, but now that I'm here on the field, I feel like I want to play again. Is that, I mean, that could have been like that for Steve Young, right?
Totally. Yeah. So Steve was probably our oldest participant, right? And yep. down to our most recent, who still have the young, fresh legs doing that. It's there. So my personal attestation to that was like my competitive juices got flowing. Okay, the Royal gets up, right? We get up 13-0. And so the way you get back in these games, and everybody knows this, whether it's 7-on-7 or flag football, you throw the boring passes. You don't go deep. But Kalani told us in the morning to put on a show. So, you know, when Royal, in order to get back in the game, if you notice, they're throwing checkdowns, they're hitting the wide receivers, the tight end in the flat. I started going out there and chirping, like, at Max and James and Jake. And, you know, I was out there and said, boring. You know, nobody came here to watch you check it down to a running back. And that was like, that's like uncharacteristic. I shouldn't care that much, you know, like let them do what they're going to do. But the old like trash talker came out in me and I couldn't help myself. But I thought it was just physical movements, but it was also like such psychological competitiveness that reared its ugly head too.
Did you get any of the trash talk back at you? Max all had to have said something.
Well, so the funniest thing was with Max. No, I mean, Max, you know, he turned away. Max's biggest thing, he's not going to give credence to anything. But I did get, you know, he was looking away and he did kind of put that behind just to like keep talking. But my claim to fame, I actually goaded him. It didn't end up in a pick. But, like, he forced the ball downfield into double coverage, and it was almost intercepted, like, uncharacteristic of Max. And so I was ribbing him after, being like, I almost got you. I got under your skin just a little bit, which was some fun back and forth.
Oh, I love it so much. It was so much fun to watch. I love when all those guys get together again. Well, BYU basketball's Big 12 debut season has come to an end, so now all attention is back on football. Spring ball wraps up this week with some question marks about what to expect after a 5-7 season last year. So my first question is, what is your excitement level for BYU's 2024 football season as of March? Carter, let's start with you. What's up, Carter?
Hey, how's it going? I feel like you just joined in. I'll be honest. I'll be the Debbie Downer here. I'm excited because it's football. Is that a good answer? But I'm not that excited. Yeah. I don't expect a bowl game. I think a bowl game is what you hope for. And when your expectations and your hope is to go 6-6, that doesn't make for an exciting football season.
Dang. Riley, what do you think about that?
You started this off by saying basketball just wrapped up. How was basketball in the preseason prognostications?
Very true. Very true.
So, like, that's why you play the games. Like, I always joke with people about that. In football, it's so tough because the season is so short and the offseason is so long. We have no choice but to sit here and talk about rankings and media and all that. Everybody's, like, guess at what they're going to be. And I always, like, as a BYU fan, like, I always joke up when people want to talk about preseason and be like, you're right. We shouldn't even bother playing. But, of course, we play because you have to let it play out on the field. Now, it's so hard in the age of NIL and transfer to project. Like, you used to be able to, like, follow a position group and be like, oh, we were young there. And, this dude, he showed some promise late in the season. But with transfers and this and that, it's so hard to keep track of what the depth chart looks like and who you have coming back. And then the development of players. Okay, you get a transfer in, but, like, you haven't been able to watch that dude develop, right? I remember a guy that I played with, Alani Fua, right? He played for the Cardinals for a couple of years, and fans will remember Alani. Alani came in like string bean, and you're like, oh, where does he fit? He's too big to play on the back end of the D, but he's too light to play up front. And you watched him, but you knew he had freak athleticism, and you knew he had great instincts, and you watched him develop into being, you know, by the time he was a junior and a senior, he was a guy that opposing offenses had to account for because he was big. Like, you lose that aspect of it. So it's hard for me to be excited, to be up or down, because I don't really know what the roster's like or what it's going to play. Just looking at the landscape, though, by adding the Arizona schools and Utah and Colorado, obviously, we know the caliber that Utah brings to the conference. So, you know, that is tough. And here you go. I'm talking about the age of transfers. Did Noah Fifita, and did he stay at Arizona?
Yes.
Yeah. So he stayed with Jed Fish and that top wide receiver who were freshman phenoms, right? So their program's like up and coming. So that's adding more intense competition to their already tough contingent. And I don't think Deion's going to stay down for long over at Colorado. I mean, I know they started off with a bang and then completely imploded, but I think those guys, that was year one. I think they're only going to get better. I think Arizona State truly is kind of lost out there. But you added three quality programs who are kind of there with BYU where they're trying to like make their mark on it. Well, maybe with the exception of Utah. I think Utah's coming in with the expectation to compete for a conference championship. But you had Arizona and Colorado. They're right there with BYU that are trying to like make their mark and fight and separate themselves from the middle of the pack. You probably didn't need a whole like preseason Riley Nelson conference rundown, but you asked if I'm excited, and that's where my mind goes, is try to evaluate critically like where BYU actually is. And the reality, it goes back to what I said at the beginning, is I'm always, as an alum, I'm always going to hope for the best. And I think I trust in Kalani and Roderick and Coach Hill to put a good squad out there. But the reality is we're not going to know until they kick the ball off.
Absolutely. And I feel very similarly to you. I think the addition of those teams does add to the excitement level because you don't know what's going to happen. Obviously, you add rival Utah. That's always exciting because anything can happen in that game. Doesn't matter how well each program are doing in the season. To me, football is football. I love it as a fan despite knowing better. I'm always excited for the season to start. A clean slate, like you said, anything can happen. You just don't know. But with that, Vegas has the Cougars win total at 4.5 games for the 2024 season. So logically, it's hard for me as of right now to come up with a strong case to prove why they're wrong. As a fan, I want them to be wrong, right? But Riley, do you see this national perception of how things will play out for BYU football this season as an advantage or disadvantage for BYU? Or doesn't even matter, because I know BYU likes to have that underdog mentality. So do you think it's a good thing or a bad thing that Vegas says they're only going to have 4.5 wins?
Yeah, I mean, look, I feel like the national media always underclubs us, and we as Cougar Nation always overclub, right? We're a little bit too optimistic. The national media is probably a little bit pessimistic. Here's what I'll say on that over-under, though. How many times in the last – so the under is 4. How many times – okay, let's call it since Lavelle, or maybe we can remember more recently, since Lavelle retired, right? So 2001. How many times has BYU won 4 games? 2017, right? Was that 4? That was about there. When else have we ever won that few games? And what I'm saying is there's something to program DNA. Like the bottom just doesn't fall out of this BYU football team. Yeah, we've had our 5-7 years. We've had our, we've had the game. I'll count my senior year as one, right? We went 8-5 and lost 4 of those 8 by a combined 6 points. Like the ball didn't bounce our way that season or injuries or whatever. But like kind of worst case scenario is always flirting with that bowl. The bottom doesn't fall out. So I feel like that's a little bit of a slight by Vegas to pin them at 4.5. And I don't know where the money's going on that or if that'll move. I feel pretty confident that BYU is going to be able to find 5 wins simply because two things you can count on. Maybe we're not, maybe as we've been navigating the back half of Independence and navigating the P5, you can't like chalk us up for 10 wins like you used to be able to do in the WAC days or the Mountain West days. But I do feel like you can have a high level of confidence that the bottom is not going to fall out on A, the program, regardless of who's at the helm, B, a program with Kalani Sitake at the helm, and C, a program last year that, like, Keaton Slovis is hurt. The offensive line was a mess. They couldn't really – L.J. Martin was kind of finding his way. No real receiving threat. And that's just on the offensive side of the football. No real pass rush. Yeah. Do we really think that like Coach Sitake and crew are dysfunctional and they're going to sit idly by and those things will repeat themselves? No, I think they take step forward in those key important areas and you add the program DNA to that. Carter, you said it's hard to get excited when like your best case scenario is getting to a bowl win, but that's incremental improvement. And whether we like it or not, the jump to P5 is going to be a stair step. And so all I really hope for is that we do take a step upward and forward and not a step back. And so that's what I'm hanging my hopes and expectations on.
Yeah, two things.
I love that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Carter.
So two things that go off that is, one, you mentioned the jump to P5. I think looking at Utah is a great example. We think Utah's this premier program, right? But when they joined the Pac-12, they struggled early on and incrementally got better and better and better each year because they have Kyle Whittingham and a great coach there. And the other thing I wanted to mention, you said, when was the last time BYU had four or less wins? So I got the stats here for you. So 2017, obviously, then 2003, and then before that, it wasn't until 1970. So great point there.
55 years, and it's happened twice. Like, I just, those aren't good odds, which I'm surprised Vegas is putting them out there. But anyway.
Yeah, and all Vegas has to really base their information off of is what happened last year, right? And who's coming back, very similar personnel. So I think we as fans know they'll hopefully – I like that you mentioned the DNA. I think that is so true, the DNA of BYU football. Kalani Sitake is a great coach. Love what Jay Hill has done to the defense. So even on the defensive side, they're only going to get better. They're only going to get better from here as people learn that defensive scheme better and better. So I'm excited. Yeah, go ahead.
And, Lauren, let's call back. You say they've got the small sample size of last season. Okay. Oklahoma on the ropes. If Retzlaff just hands the ball off, right? Doesn't Russell Wilson? Right?
We got to bring up Oklahoma. Oh,
yeah. You probably beat Oklahoma, which that right there puts you at 6-6. I felt like the Kansas game got ugly in the fourth, but I feel like they were right there with Kansas. A couple boneheaded turnovers turned the tides of that game. I don't know. Are there any other ones that I'm missing that could have gone either way? I just feel like they were right there at ball bounced the other way. Now, here's one thing that, and I talk about program DNA, that I even myself, and I hope it doesn't happen internally. Fans, you kind of have to do it to survive and keep the optimism alive, but taking moral victories, this is loser talk, right? Talking about games that coulda, woulda, shouldas. I hope internally they're not doing that, but we as fans, we have to, because it's what keeps our hopes and dreams alive.
Carter asked you, the fans, what your excitement level is for BYU football right now, and here is one of your responses.
I'm super excited for this upcoming season. I think year two in the Big 12 is going to be a really big year. Really important to see how the team progresses, how they, you know, what adjustments they make from their first year. I think there's a really good chance they have a really great year. I think it's going to be a difficult schedule, though.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about BYU's QB battle and play buy or sell. This is Cougar Tailgate. Welcome back to Cougar Tailgate. I'm Lauren McClain with Carter Bond and Riley Nelson. All right, BYU currently has a QB battle between Jake Retzlaff and Gary Bohannon and maybe some others, but those two are definitely at the top and most talked about. Riley, you know this very well. How important is it for these QBs to play well in spring ball?
Well, for the point of the team, it's good because the team, like, as the QB goes, so goes the offense, and it's hard for, like, the, as crazy as it sounds, like, it feels like the offensive line can operate in a vacuum, and probably they most closely can operate in a vacuum. But, like, if a quarterback isn't consistently making the right reads, getting the ball out on time and throwing accurately, it's hard to develop wide receivers, right? If they're not making the right checks, it's hard for the offensive lineman to get into a groove. It's maybe easier on running backs, because I think any quarterback who's going to compete for a P5 D1 job should at least know where to hand the ball off. But it is hard if the quarterbacks are not really got the offense rhythm. It does limit the development of those other position groups. But more so than the offense as a whole, it affects just the progress of the player individually. And I of course, was a part of one at Utah State as a true freshman. And then to replace Max Hall, I was part of a heated quarterback debate. So I went through it twice in the course of my college career. And I loved it. I loved the refiner's fire. You know, some players get to come in and redshirt and play scout team quarterback and just get a million throws, and they get to go against the one defense. That was never my lot as a quarterback. Instead, my development and my real time to grow and develop came in two heated quarterback battles throughout the course of my career. And I was grateful for them. I know I was a better player because of them.
From your experience then, is the starter chosen now in spring ball, or is it more in fall camp? Because I feel like as you get to fall camp, you kind of want to have the guy established, right, as you're heading into the season. So do you think Kalani's chosen the starter now?
That's a little bit overblown. I'll say this. It's a little bit overblown in the absence of other leadership. If you do not have senior veteran leadership at other positions, and it's not just – you have to have a strong leader on both sides of the football. So, you know, the quarterback leadership isn't as relevant to the, although he is often looked at as the overall leader of the team, he's not as relevant on the defensive side of the football, and likewise. So as long as, and I don't know, maybe he just has a lot of NIL deals or whatever, but I feel like the likes of like a Connor Pay, or there's some experienced guys, you know, maybe on the wide receiver core, or maybe one of the backs, as long as they're stepping up and providing that leadership, because it is hard. The one thing that is hard is you cannot empower a leader who has not actually earned and won the job. So if there's a void, of leadership on the offense, it could potentially hurt. But if it's not, carrying the competition through summer and into fall camp, I don't think is a real detriment to the team.
How much of an advantage do you think that Jake Retzlaff has over the other guys with his familiarity with the playbook, A-Rod's schemes, the wide receivers? How much of a leg up do you think he has right now?
I think it's there if he takes advantage of it. It's only as good as if he disciplines himself and continues to build on that knowledge and doesn't get sidetracked. You know, I had to learn that lesson with Jake. So Jake comes in not knowing the offense or whatever. I come in having known the offense. And Jake had, you know, truly exceptional arm talent. And so I spent a good number of months there being like, oh, I've got to match him arm for arm, throw for throw, when the reality was I had to compete when I should have been. And I finally eventually got to this place where I was competing more on, okay, well, I should use my intelligence. I should use my familiarity with the offense. I should use my other tools, like my tools for anticipation, my tools to be accuracy, and not try and go like throw for throw with this guy on like the deep balls and stuff like that. I'll still work on that, but I'd rather focus on my strengths than focus on my weaknesses. I can't remember. I think it's like a Warren Buffett or maybe a Charlie Munger, like one of those old wise, you know, business guys that talked about men are far better off magnifying their strengths than they are trying to overcome weaknesses, at least as far as being efficient. And I'm a believer of that as a football player. So you mentioned Jake's. What are Jake's advantages? His advantages are the fact that he's been in the program, the fact that he has starts under his belt. And so he should look to magnify and compound upon those rather than seeing where he might be deficient against Gary, right? And try and make up for those deficiencies. You're better off kind of diverging rather than you are converging.
And I really do like what we've seen from Jake Retzlaff. That he had some tough goes, right? With some tough fumbles, seemingly couldn't take care of the ball, but I feel like what we've seen from him has been incredible. And I love that advice that I hope he takes that to heart, is to play upon his own strength, because I feel like he's a phenomenal player that could be fantastic. So we'll see what happens with him in the future.
Two things I'd say to him. Yeah, sorry, ahead. Lauren, but just go two ahead. Things I'd say to him is, one, quarterbacks that do best in Aaron Roderick's offense take care of the football. They keep their turnovers low. So that is number one. You should know that. And then number two is that at the P5 level in the Big 12, and this is not a slight, you just, self-awareness is key to being a good football player. Like, you are not an athletic of enough freak. You do not possess the tools to take over a game yourself. So stay within yourself, and that kind of compounds on number two. Stay within yourself, make the plays that you're going to make, but don't get outside yourself, because it's when you get outside yourself that you feel that panic and desperation. And when you feel panic and desperation, you make bad decisions that hurt the team. So if he can remember those two truths, I think, you know, two things will be happening. One, it will help him in the competition, but two, it will help him not just win the job initially, but keep it throughout the rest of the season and help the team win.
And what you saw from him last season, do you feel like he has what it takes to stay as BYU's starting quarterback?
It's hard to say. I don't have a big enough sample size on the rest of the room. I think it was raw. It was a small sample size, and it was, you know, at that point the offense kind of had lost a little bit of identity. But
yeah.
Look, I view him. A lot of people ask me, and I think he's a lot. I don't think he was anybody's first choice. I view his career as similar to mine. Like, I don't know that I was anybody's first choice at BYU, but I earned my way onto the field. I earned the respect of my teammates, and I produced enough to, you know, and we won a lot of games. And so I think Jake can do that. I still have my questions about him, right? Can he bottle up can he bottle up that erraticness? Can he prove that he has the decision-making accuracy to be a consistent producer in the Big 12? And you know, can he lead guys over the course of an entire season to, you know, inspire them? Because that's what you are going to need at some point. This is high level P5 football. There's going to be a point where all eyes are on you as the quarterback. And can you inspire guys to play to a level above which even themselves think are capable? And I think all those things are there. Lauren, your original point is, does he have it? I think we've seen flashes. For me, it's just a remainder of seeing a bigger enough sample size to be able to definitively say yes or no.
Absolutely. We're going to play buy or sell BYU football style, and we'll start with you, Carter. Buy or sell, with TJ Woods joining the staff, the run game will average over 150 rushing yards per game. Last year, for context, they only had 104.3, and that was only in the last few games because of Aiden Robbins. So are you buying or selling that, Carter?
I'm going to buy. Like, we watched last season, they averaged 104.3, like you mentioned. I don't think it can get worse than last season. And these guys, another year in the system, I think we're going to see a lot more of the quarterback running the ball. I think we're going to see Retzlaff run, or whether it's Bohannon, whoever. I think they're going to be running the ball a little bit more. So total team rushing yards, give me the over on that one. I buy it.
Riley, what about you? Buy or sell?
I'll buy it too. One of the things that I heard at Alumni Day is that Coach Roderick always loves to have the, not that it becomes a primary part of the run game, but he always loves having the option. And we saw that with both Zach and Jaron, right, to have a quarterback. Retzlaff running around or Bohannon running around isn't going to make up that entire 46-yard gap. But I also hear that Coach Woods has brought a new attitude, that players are playing faster, more instinctive, more confidently on the offensive line. One more year under L.J. Martin's belt, another couple names to add to that mix at running back that adds some depth there in case there's some injuries. So I'm going to buy it. I'm not going to buy it at a super high price, but I do. Just simply because, like, look, the reality is it's the Big 12 and you want to gain yards however you can gain yards. I don't think they should sell out just to average 150. So maybe just the way the offense shakes out, it doesn't average to that. But as far as like a significant improvement on the 104 average from last season, I'll buy that for sure.
What's interesting is, I mean, obviously Keaton Slovis, they said, was a pro-style quarterback, and then he ends up running, what was it, a 4.6 at the combine. Mind-blowing. Not sure.
4.55. And that
was
shows
that what
you,
it was?
Yeah, and that shows you, which is crazy, because that shows you how relevant 40 times are for a quarterback. Quarterbacks is much more relevant your acceleration and your change of direction, because you're not called upon to try and like beat a DB deep over his head. What you need to do is like get out of a sticky pocket and have enough acceleration to beat a linebacker to the first down marker. And I don't know, Keaton wasn't that type of athlete. Once he gets out and those big legs and train gets going, he can put up a good 40 time, but it's not as relevant. It's the same thing. Daniel Jones, remember 2 seasons ago, Daniel Jones for the Giants, he had a faster MPH on their GPS than Tyreek Hill did, right? Oh, well, a lot of good that did him and the Giants, right? Because that, that only happens once he gets 40 yards down the field. Sorry, Lauren, we're not talking about.
No, I love it. No, I love it. It's not relevant unless you're Taysom Hill, right? Yeah. Who ran a 4.4. I believe at Pro Day.
Well, but his acceleration was exceptional. His vertical jump, his broad jump, and that showed on the field, right? His times are relevant when talking about his speed because it was on display on the field. Keaton's times are not relevant when talking about his feet on the field because it was of no utility to anybody, not himself nor the offense. And so it's a fun little like side note, but it's not something to get too excited over.
I hope lots of fans are listening to this because Twitter was alight with fans just disgusted, like, why didn't BYU use Keaton Slovis's legs? But so I think that's a really good perspective to keep in mind. All right, the next one is buy or sell. BYU will win on the road against Utah this season. Riley, let's start with you.
I'm buying it out of sheer loyalty. Also, like, nasty knee injury and Utah with the, is he coming back? Is he not? Now it's hard to bet against Whittingham. And man, when was the last time we won? Was the last time we won in Rice Cycle? John Beck, 2006, 20 years ago. Yeah.
Yep.
So the last time you went there is 20 years ago. And so it's hard to bet against it, but I just, all the off field distractions that Utah had last year, and you're charting back this guy who's like, and granted, they could have said this about Taysom Hill too, right? But like, how many years has this dude played college? What is he, like 27 at this point, coming back off season-ending injuries, right? So we had the same thing recently with Taysom. But I'll buy it simply because, like you said, anything can happen in a rivalry game. And I think by speaking it into existence, it increases the likelihood of it actually happening.
I hope that's true. I'm going to buy it as well. Just out of pure spite, And Utah will probably be on their backup quarterback by then. What do you think, Carter?
So before going into this episode, I would have said 100% sell, no way, no how. But Riley kind of convinced me to be positive, not be a Debbie Downer, and be positive about BYU sports. And you're right, anything can happen in a rivalry game. So I'm going to buy it. I think they get the upset in Rice-Eccles.
All right, we'll see what happens. All right, the last one is buy or sell. BYU's wide receiver group is the strongest core on the team right now. Carter, do you buy it or sell it?
I think I buy it, but I would like to see more. You know, there's so many transfer portal guys. I don't know who's going to be great. I just need to see more before I can 100% buy it. But as of now, yes, I would buy that. It's the strongest group.
What do you think, Riley?
I'm selling. I think it's the linebackers. There was no one on that. While I like these guys and I hope for the best, there was no one on that wide receiver core last year that a defense had to account for. Like no one that they were scared to, no one that they had to keep the safety over top. It was no one. And so until proven otherwise, like that to me, actually, as many problems as they had on the offensive line, I think those are more easily fixed. The wide receiver core, I got to see. I mean, Lassiter kind of started to emerge there at the end. And I know they're high on a couple of these guys. But until I see that on Saturdays, it remains to be seen for me.
All right, we've talked about the alumni game, and one of BYU's alum is trying to find a home right now. The Jets are looking to trade Zach Wilson if they get the right offer. Here's one of – ooh, let me redo that. Sorry, guys. Here's what one of you thinks where he should go.
Zach Wilson, I would love to see him traded to the 49ers. You know, I think that's a great offense. I would really compliment his skills. Also would love for him to get traded to the Chiefs, sit behind Patrick Mahomes, be with another BYU guy, Andy Reid. That's my opinion. Excited for BYU football next season. It's going to be a great season, and hope Zach gets traded to the Chiefs or 49ers.
All right, Riley, where would you like to see Zach Wilson end up next season? We know the Jets are saying they're going to keep him if they don't get the right offer. Where would you like to see him end up?
Now, I mean, I know he's on a long-term contract, and it's not that, but, like, we started off talking about Steve Young and how fun that was to be with. Like, at the time, Steve Young landed with Bill Walsh and the San Francisco 49ers and Joe Montana, which was the best. It was the best coach and the best run organization in the league at the time. And he was able to hang on long enough to get his turn and capitalize on all the hard work that he put in. So, like, I know that it's not the same situation with Patrick Mahomes, but, like, I'd love for him to be with Andy Reid and Kansas City. If nothing else, like, let some of the wounds heal, let some of the stuff get past, kind of get Andy's stamp of approval, learn from the best that there is. And then he probably, to get another opportunity at being a starting quarterback, he'd have to leave Kansas City because Mahomes isn't going anywhere for the next 12 to 15 years. But that's where I'd say, I know people have thrown, they'd love to see him, like, you know, Shanahan and 49ers. The problem is, that's a quarterback carousel. Like, yeah, we're all hot on Brock Purdy now, but we were also hot when they had Jimmy Garoppolo. And prior to that, like, Trey Lance was supposed to be the next. And the NFL is just – it's just tough and it's terrible. I hope he goes – but the other well-run organization, he doesn't really fit in the offense behind Lamar Jackson. But, like, Baltimore – I just want him to go to what I think they're the most consistent and well-run organizations in the NFL. I think any one of those – it's going to be a chance for him to, like, kind of go, let some of the narratives surrounding Zach, whether true or not, kind of calm down, let him put in the deep work, and then hopefully an opportunity for him to be a starter emerges sometime in the future. It can happen. Look at what happened with Baker Mayfield. You know, people kind of counted him out after leaving Cleveland. He was kind of doing Band-Aid duty down in L.A. Rams, and then emerges this year with Tampa, and they just extended him. So, something like that, but I don't really have a big preference other than I hope it's an organization that has their stuff in order and it can be a calming place for him rather than the stormy, tumultuous environment that's been up in New York.
I was going to say, in short, almost any other organization besides the Jets. Carter, where do you want him to end up?
I agree with the Chiefs. I think that is, you know, just get to a place where the culture is basically the opposite of where you were. Another sneaky one I would like to see is maybe Atlanta. Atlanta has a lot of great weapons. Tyler Algier's down there. Bijan Robinson, they got a great receiving core. And you'd be behind Kirk Cousins. And I think we don't know how healthy Kirk Cousins will be coming off his torn Achilles. So that might give him a chance to play and play early on. That's one to look out for. But like Riley mentioned, like, do you want to go to an organization that has not historically had great quarterbacks? So I think the Chiefs is the right answer.
And a new first-year head coach, right?
Exactly, very true.
And we already saw how that worked out with Saleh. Like, whoever's more established. So anyway.
Yeah, I love it. All right, guys, that does it for today. Thanks again to Riley Nielsen and Carter Bond for coming on the show with me. Carter and Tori Kibble helped produce this episode with senior producer Cleon Wall. You can join the Cougar Tailgate wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or on BYUradio.org. Cougar Tailgate is a production of BYU Radio.